Whoa. I love back, guys. We're back again with another episode of This Is Africa. My name is Adama.
Hi, guys. I'm Tamba.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lord.
Welcome back. My name is Amiri.
And today, we'll be talking about myths, fantasy, reality, getting into some of those details. Specifically, though, we're going to talk about myths relating to Africans in the diaspora. I guess to start, just to say, like, as we all know, there are many myths about what Africans in the diaspora are like and how our lives in America specifically or in places abroad are. But I feel like all four of us at this table know that the truth is that a lot of these myths are rooted in a lot of misinformation and lack of knowledge at times. And personally, I believe it can be a danger at times to people back home. But at the same time, a lot of those ties have shown to be fruitful. But when going over this topic with a friend, one of the questions that was posed to me was, does this mean that a lot of the people back home spend too much time idolizing us here? And so today we'll kind of get into what some of those myths are, where they are rooted, why they're thought, and more, I guess, to start. What are some of the stereotypes and misinformation, I guess, that we hear most?
That we got money. That we rich. Come to America, you're walking literally roads paved with gold. You know, money's easy access. You don't got to work too hard for it. And I kind of blame, all right, so I give blame to both sides. I give blame to, you know, our friends and family back at home. And I give blame to also to us because, you know, the way America is marketed to the rest of the world, as a land of opportunities, as a land of freedom, you know, as a land of where you can get some level of socioeconomic mobility, as long as you work hard for it, is enticing to a lot of people, especially to our friends and family in Africa. So they see that as if you go there, you practically made it because, you know, the Hollywood movies and the people coming back home with. So this is where now I blame us, because when we go back to, again, when I go back to Ghana, well, I haven't been back to Ghana in a minute, but when my friends and family go back to Ghana, they be balling out and splurging crazy. And which is rightfully so, because you worked hard for your money. And when you go back home, you want to enjoy the fruits of your labor. But now that gives the perception to people who don't have it like that in Ghana, thinking that, okay, this person's in the States. Look at what they came back with these nice clothes. Some of them brought cars. A lot of money, they treat it with respect, this and that. You know, that right there in their minds, once you touch America, this is how America is. They see the glorified parts of it. But then they don't know what goes on behind the scenes when, you know, they come back to the States, where you work in jobs where, you know, 9 to 5, working jobs where you're not even tell your family you do those type of jobs, because if you do those type of jobs back at home in Ghana, you kind of look down upon. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, yeah. So for example, if you're cleaning somebody's house in the States, and you telling your family, your friends and family back at home, saying that the how I got my money is cleaning people's houses at home, keep cleaning people's houses. In Ghana, cleaning somebody's house in Ghana is like, yo, you don't even have a lot of money, or like you're just struggling to make ends meet. So that right there, the job perception, right? Is like, why would you do a job that is beneath you if you was in Ghana, but you'd rather do it in America? Because now the game is different. Because over here, it's like, you got to make it how you make it. But back at home is, your job also tells you a lot about you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Not to say that it doesn't happen in the States, but the perception really drives home how you're treated and respected in Ghana compared to the United States. So that's why I say I give blame on both sides, because on one side of the spectrum, looking, because I've been in both sides too. I was born in Ghana. I also came here when I was very, very young. So I've seen where, you know, some of my uncles and aunties come from America, and, you know, they're giving me money like that, right? So I'm automatically thinking that when you come to the States, You know, I was thinking that even high school in the States was like High School Musical, you know, like things that, again, it's marketed, you know, by America to the rest of the world. And, you know, we as Africans, or in my case, Ghanaians, buy into it. But it's not reality. Well, over here, it's like you got to be paying taxes. You can't have sick days like that. You don't have leisure to. Yeah, but they don't pay taxes like that. Seriously. Hmm. Where the IRS is coming knocking at your door. Yeah, that's not happening in Ghana. Seriously,
you'd be surprised, because you haven't been there in your adult life. So with the taxes, let's hold on that, because you have to pay your taxes. Yeah. It's very important.
I'm not saying I'm not saying that you don't have to pay your taxes or they don't pay taxes. No, not at all. But it's not heavily enforced as it is in the States.
Maybe, sure.
I don't know. In my case, sure. That's a fact.
Sure. To your point, though, a good point that Lord made is the perception aspect. And I have to agree with that. Like, people think that we're living like kings in America, or if you are in France, or if you are in Spain. But they don't know that when you come from Africa to America, depending on your situation, you're at the bottom of the food chain. And this is even consistent with the Caribbean. All the African diaspora around the world, when you're living in a diaspora, unless, you know, you have a good job, most likely you're living at the bottom of the food chain. So you're doing the little stuff, like sales on the street and stuff. But people back home, since you're here, they just think that's your life. Like, they think you're living, like Lord said, the Hollywood life. But that's not necessarily the case every time, you know. And that today, that's what I kind of want us to get across, that it's not all sunshine and rainbows in America. Like, the struggles are real here. Maybe not as much as the way people are struggling back home. But for example, here you can live in an apartment, while back home you live in a house. You know, those little differences are the thing. Over there, back home, even some of the family that are not well off have maids, little things like that. You know, everybody, it's like and for people that are not familiar with Africa that are listening to us as well, almost all middle class families have maids in Africa, right? Over here, middle class family, only rich people, yeah, only rich people have maids here. You know, that was one of the things that actually kind of shocked me when I came to America for the first time. When I came to America, like, it was, all right, Tamba, now you're the one that has to do the dishes. You're the one that has to clean around the house. Like, it became a lot more structured. While when I'm back home, I can count the amount of times on my hand where I see dishes. I'm not going to lie. I do them, and I just get up and I leave the table, which is not a good thing. But that also, now that I go back now, according to your lifestyle, I start to notice those things. So now I'm like, oh, wow, some of these kids that live here don't even know that we have to do that back there. You know, like when I wake up in the morning, I gotta make my bed. Some of those, they don't have to make their beds, man. Like, it's like little things like that. So now, even when I go back now, I kind of feel weird not doing my bed. I kind of feel weird giving the dishes to somebody else to do them. I always try to do them myself, because I know what it's like over there. It's not all sunshines and rainbows over here.
Yeah, I would definitely say abroad, or in any westernized country, you definitely have to hustle to make a living. Like, the stress load is different, and you have to deal with a lot of different variables that play a factor in terms of your mental state of mind and your financial state of mind. It's not just like, oh yeah, we come here to America, or come here to like a European country, and like, money is given to us in terms of, all right, here's the American dream, make use of it. Definitely not. I don't want to curse, but if you don't bust your ass, that you are going to stay at the bottom, you know? So it's like that misconception of, I would say, family members and friends back home, they don't really understand the depth of living abroad too. Like, it's a lot of factors that play a part in terms of our lifestyle.
Okay, just to like, I've heard you guys' points, and I guess like what it made me think about just to kind of be somebody maybe in their shoes, viewing us from back home or whatever it might be, I think maybe we're giving ourselves a little too much credit as far as what they're idolizing about our lives here. I think it's more, it's less of an individual thing and more so an idolization of the fact that you have an opportunity that they might not be having whatsoever. And I feel like that more so is the glimmer of light we see in their eyes when they think about us coming back. It's like, you came from all that opportunity. Like, that's an aura. That's a place. I wish I could even enter that zone and feel that type of energy. And I think that's more so where their mindsets are at. Because I feel like we definitely do have people that say things, but more often than not, I feel like it's more of a joke. Like, it's like, oh, not entirely, but a part of it definitely, I feel like it's part of, like, a little bit of a joke. It's just, you guys are rich. You guys have this. People are aware it's not easy. It's not perfect anywhere. Nowhere on this planet is there an easy life. But it's a little bit more easier where we're at.
To me, it's more of like the mentality of just thinking that, like, yeah, he live abroad, so he got it, you know? Like, he don't got to worry about certain stuff, you know? He got it, you know? Like, yo, just buy me this and then bring it down for me, you know? It's not like that. I literally have to work for every dollar I earn, you feel me? So, like, take your time.
Yeah, and to Adama's point, I agree with you in the part where you were saying about, you know, they view us as the opportunity that they, if they get their hands on it, that's all they want. Yeah. But that's thinking that it's all sunshines and rainbows on this side, you know?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I agree with Adama.
And in my opinion, I think they know it's not all sunshines and rainbows. It's just it's a little bit more sunshine and rainbows than it is where I'm from. You know what I'm saying? I take a life where I can have 70% more sunshine and rainbow than rain every other, you know, week or whatever it might be. I'd rather have, I don't know. When I look at my problems here and I look about the problems that the world is facing outside of this country, it's tough. And I think it's tougher than here.
Yeah, I agree with Adama. Just looking at things from a different perspective or just switching the lens from my lens that I'm living through right now, it's literally relative because, again, my parents tell me that when they go back to Ghana and, you know, they see what's going on and they come back home, they're like, you know, you guys are blessed to be over here because they see, you know, some of either their nieces or their nephews, especially when it comes to, let's say, school, right?
They're not lying.
You know, when I'm in the States, I'm going to public school where it's funded by the government. So in terms of school fees, that is not, you know, something that is weighing on your mind. But back home, you know, some of my nieces and nephews, depending on the family situation, they can't afford school. You know what I'm saying? Because, yeah. You know, so certain things like that, the opportunity aspect, that's the allure of it, you know. But sometimes the allure can be, you know, misleading. You could get carried away for that because sometimes, again, looking at things relatively, from looking at things back at home or back from Ghana, I get it that you have the opportunity that I don't have. When you come back home, the way you treat it, the way you move, the way you act, the way you talk, that's an allure to it. I want to get into that. Now, there's the misconception that how you got it is easy because, again, you don't know what's going on in the other side of that Atlantic Ocean or the Mediterranean or wherever you are, you know.
Pacific.
Or the Pacific. You know, you don't know what it's like. But the same thing, too, over here in terms of, those who have never been back home, so this is the first generation diaspora kids, they don't also know what they're going through really from the outside. So, for example, when Ghana was going through a year of return, right, and I was talking to some of my family members, my cousins, some of my friends back at home, like, Ghana's booming right now. It's year of return. Y'all having fun. Y'all being lit. This, that, and that. But it didn't dawn on me that, like, if you got it in Ghana, that's where you could see that whole fun aspect of the year of return. You know what I'm saying? Where some of my friends or family members cannot afford to go to Bloom Bar. You know what I'm saying? Or go to Labadi Beach. You know, or certain parts where, again, people from the African diaspora are heavily there at, you know, because they have the money to spend over there. So that right there, if you live in Ghana and you're not making that type of money, or like you see all these people from abroad living a certain lifestyle that you want to live in Ghana, but you can't do so due to circumstances, opportunities, and all that, that gives you the allure and sometimes go into the misconception that it's greener on the other side because of the glorified success that comes with it. But just like the iceberg, you know, the tip of the iceberg is the fun aspect of the glorified version of it. But what's underneath it, there's a whole lot of things that, you know, some people in Ghana know, but others don't.
Yeah, so I want you to explain a little more of that to our audience, because some people may have never been to Africa. They live in a diaspora and they don't know about it at all. So I want you, like, would you guys mind going into that a little bit, like the tip of the iceberg part? You just explained that. So what's underneath it? What are some of the struggles you go through that people wouldn't even see back home, or people living in a diaspora in general are going through that people back home wouldn't see? Because you just explained their point of view, of view, and you explained that to the T. Mm-hmm. Now, I want you to talk about how us in the diaspora, our point of view now, what we're doing that they're not seeing.
Just in terms of, for example, like work, you know, the way the work culture is very structured over here, you cannot get easy leisure time off. You know what I'm saying? It's snowing blizzard outside, you know, and my pops is trooping it to work.
That's right. You know what I'm saying? No money.
Or, for example, also think of that. Not only are you trying to, again, this is more so from my parents' perspective and not mine, but not only are you trying to provide for your family in the States, in my case, but you also try to provide for your family back at home. That stretches your money. You know what I'm saying? Because, again, let's say, for example, my parents, before they go back to Ghana, they make barrels to ship it back to Ghana so that certain things that they need from here, they can have it back at home. It's expensive to send those things through shipping to Ghana. It's expensive buying a plane ticket to Ghana. That's why they don't even go so often. Because to drop, depending on where you buy it, from either $800 to $1,500, that's a lot of money that you're spending on a ticket just to go back home, where that $1,500, $800 could take care of some things over here. Because you also have a life over here that you're trying to establish, not only for yourself, but also for your children too as well. You know, so sometimes when you think it's greener on the other side, they're not only providing for their family, but they're also thinking about my family and friends back at home that they also have to support. So now the dollar's stretched very thin.
Yeah.
You know, do I give money to this person, or should I make sure that the things I need to take care of right now that is demanding of the lifestyle that it is in America, should I cater to that or not?
Yeah.
No, that's one example. One example.
Yeah, and I also want to talk about that in terms of that perception too. You know, our families back home, all their hopes are within you when you come to America. Like, the thing is, that idea of the whole village is supporting you, it's true. For some people, you're their hope. I was lucky enough to come from a family where multiple people are educated. But there's some families where only one person got to take that step in their education and was able to make it to a foreign country to make the revenue they're making, the amount of money they're making, to come back home and start helping now. That's where the example of sending stuff back home comes. Because they put all their hopes on you. Because it may be like people in the village, your neighbors even, contributed to you getting to America. Mm-hmm. You know, they put their hopes in, they put their money, they put their time. You know, you seek advice from the whole neighborhood, right? So in a sense, you kind of owe them, right? You don't owe them necessarily, but that's the feeling. So to them, it's like, when you come to America, you cannot forget about me now. Now you made it now. You're my eyes there. Whatever you got to do, do it. But make sure we get ours too for what we put into you. Because it's basically kind of like an investment. And that's what I kind of wanted to touch on in terms of their perspective. Everybody has their hopes on you. You know, and when you have kids, that transfer to your kids now. You know, it's just like a domino effect. It just keeps going. And that's kind of how that perception stayed over the years, and that's why where we're at today.
Yeah, but I feel like, too, I definitely agree with that. Like, if, like, you make it out from, like, your village or, like, a certain part of, like, where you came from back home, and you make it to, like, a country like the U.S. or England or something like that, you definitely have way more opportunities and capacity to give back, you know? However, the mentality of, that's a lot of stress on that person, too. Because it's like, you're not only living for yourself, but you're living for your family members back home. And not only that, you're living up to expectations of your family members back home. So it was like, they're expecting you to deliver, you know? And sometimes you might not be able to deliver because you pay for your rent, you pay for, like, your certain, like, expenses pertaining to your kids, you pay for certain things, and, like, you just can't afford to, like, give back at this point in time. So it's a point of just kind of appreciating what you get from that person abroad, you know? Yeah. That's just my thing about it.
I don't know how much about you guys, but I can remember several times on occasion I've asked my mother for money. She said no. And the following day, I'm hearing hundreds of dollars being sent back home. It's definitely something that's happened tons of times. And my parents are givers. It's like, and I've always been aware, whether or not I've known why or how much or what's going on, they've always been given back, sending something back home or having people back home come here to use resources or stuff like that. I've had aunts and family members come from back home and use facilities that are here. So I guess touching into that, we can kind of hop into the opportunity disparity, because that kind of gets into why do they think that way anyway? Like, well, what is it? Because to us, it shouldn't be idolized. I think we've made that very clear on this table today. Like, it's not that easy. The dollar can get stretched very thin, and it's a slippery slope to that point is what I wanted to say really quickly. Family. Tika talks about the village. You support everybody. Like, you don't even know where to draw the line. Like, how many uncles do you go by? How many aunts? How many cousins? Second cousin, third cousins? How far along the line do you go to give back? Because everybody wants. You know what I mean? And the more you get successful, the more everybody wants. So it's like, it's a fine line, and it can get really hectic. But again, to that point, opportunities. Like, the opportunities just aren't there. They're looking at us here and they're saying, well, I guess what we've said is that they're saying, can we eat off of what you've done? But if the opportunity was in their face to have the access to the stuff that we had, would this conversation be different?
Maybe. But I want to give an example before we get into the opportunity disparity. What, like you said, you had family members come and visit you here, right?
Yeah, people come to use facilities.
Can you explain a little bit when they come here, the difference, how they feel now? Because they're almost shocked. They're like, wait, this how it is here? It's not as easy as I thought it was. Yeah, you know, so can you explain a little bit?
It's not like New York City Times Square type of vibe.
Yeah, there's definitely, obviously there's the touring and being a tourist. That stuff is definitely a thing. But as far as like coming here and using facilities or whatever it is, obviously when they do come, the facility access and the stuff that we have, the care, it's true. There is a big difference in the care and the stuff that they have access to. But when they come here and they see that there's long lines, there's 2-week wait processes, there's when you go there, there's all these types of medications, there's rules. Filings, rules, people that can come in and see you, the price of things. Because you're coming, and a lot of the time they're coming here with nothing. They're just bringing themselves. And then whomever is here is kind of responsible for whatever happens from there. And that's when you really start seeing like the difference from when you were on the phone and you were calling and telling them that you were coming. And then when you get here and you're seeing houses being rearranged, you know what I mean? And people in middle of work, leaving work to come back and stay with you in this place for hours on end, or people traveling from different places. And it's not like we didn't already have problems. Like, people have existing issues and they're stopping their lives to help other people. You know what I mean? And to that point, it can be very draining.
Yeah.
And it's seen very quickly. Yeah, it's seen very quickly.
And there's a big difference from, I bet you guys can attest to this. There's a big difference on the people that come and visit here and then go back, the way they call you, and the people that have never come to visit. There's a huge difference in their tone. Because once you see the reality here, it's really different. Because obviously, we have more opportunities, and we're very lucky. And I'm I'm not going to discredit that. We are extremely lucky, and we're doing a disservice to ourselves if we're not successful here. That I want to make that clear. Yeah. But at the same time, it's extremely hard as well, because now you're competing with Americans. You're not competing just like with nobody. You're competing with Americans. Everybody's desperate. Everybody's trying to get it as much as you. So back to Adama's point, when they come here and they see the difference, it's really balances things out now.
That's when the phone call kind of goes from, like, you know, what's the latest thing that just released, to how are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, is everything good? The family's, that's kind of the big switch.
Yeah. Also, too, to add on to TK point, too, you brought up a good point. Not only battling with those type of things, too, but not only the fact that, like, I could speak for my parents, like, when they first came up here. Like, they dealt with, like, the fact that, like, they're not legitimized within the country in terms of citizenship. So they're not offered and guaranteed all the rights as American citizen, you know? So, like, they have to, like, deal with certain factors that they're not old.
People think you cross the border and you're American.
Yeah, people think that you come here from, like, a foreign country to America or England or, like, other European countries, and that, like, you're offered all the rights as their citizens. No. Americans view you as an immigrant, and like you're treated as an immigrant. You're not treated as like one of us until you've proven that you're one of us. Whereas you live here a certain amount of years,
you can pay Social Security for 10, 15 years, and they will still disqualify you as a full American.
Definitely. And not only that, if you commit a crime, you're going to send back to your country. So it's like, I'll say immigrants living across here in the U.S. and like abroad and stuff, you could kind of say they walk on eggshells pertaining to certain things. They don't want to get in trouble with the law. They follow the rules and the laws of society. They do their truck. They work hard. They try their best to provide for their family and their family abroad. And they make the best of their opportunities. Hence the reason why when they create kids, they instill in their kids that, like, listen, I try my best, so you got to work 10 times harder, you know? Because my workload, you gotta exceed that. You know, and kind of create opportunities for yourself. And if you want, you can help give back to, like, your family abroad, you know. But, however, there is still factors that play a part in you coming, like, immigrating from a country that you know. And not only that, you're being conditioned to a new lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, there's definitely a change in lifestyle.
Yeah, with more... The more you see, the more you grow. And to Amiri's point, you become alienated to a certain extent. Because even we have this issue with us living in the diaspora here. When we go back, we're seen as strangers. You know, we're not the same people anymore. I feel like
the celebrity.
No, it's not celebrities.
Why not?
I think it's strangers.
You're a big foreigner. Yeah, if I go to Ghana right now, I've been back in a while. But if I go back to Ghana right now, they're going to treat me as a super foreigner.
But don't get me wrong. But aren't you the cool American?
To an extent. But no, cool. I'm a foreigner. I'm telling you, they're gonna treat me as such. Unless I'm there for a very long time, where like they got used to being around me, and then that's when you know. That special treatment is going to be go away. For that time being that I'm there for a short period of time, oh yeah, I'm treated as a foreigner. Even so some of my friends they went back home, and then, you know, their aunties or their cousins or their uncle be like, I was about to speak my language right now, but like, oh, don't give him or her this food because, you know, I don't think they eat it no more. Thinking that you don't eat your culture food back in the States.
They say insulting things, yo.
You know, certain things like that. No joke. Like, some of my friends have told me that certain food, when they're cooking at home, they're like, oh, we're going to give you something more westernized because we don't know how your taste palate, blah, blah. Again, but, and I see where it's coming from, too, because there are some... Again, when I was in Ghana, there's some people that came from the States, and they really did the whole foreigner thing, that they're not nowhere in nation, no shape Ghanaian, or they think they're better than people back at home when they come home. So they be acting a little bit bougie. I was about to say stush, but bougie. You know, so sometimes they'll see that and they'll cater to that.
Other times too, they'll do it to you where they treat you bougie, even though you don't want to be bougie, you know, because again, they just see you in a different light.
Yeah, what that brings up to me, I guess, when I think, or so story time, I went into Burkina Faso about maybe like 5-6 years ago now. But when I went there, that's why when I said, like, aren't you like the cool American celebrity a little bit? Because when I went there, I was the cool American celebrity.
You just a foreigner. I don't know.
You definitely were a foreigner, but you weren't like, it was a cool foreigner. You know what I mean? Like, when I went out, as soon as I got there, my uncles, my cousins, they told me, like, yo, watch what happens when we go to this club tonight. Like, when they see you, like, watch what happens. Like, and when I went to the club that night, I spoke no French. I was not familiar with Burkina Faso, the language. I speak Wolof, you know what I mean? And I'm not amazing. I'm not super fluent, but I can have a conversation. I can understand French quite a bit. But I could tell from the way they were looking at me, I was that thing. Like, this is the cool new car that just pulled up, and we're interested in finding out more. Like,
yeah, I mean, to your point, it's different for everybody. You know, it depends how you are. For example, you guys know I've lived a lot of my life in Mali. So when I go back there, it's just, you've changed, but I'm not a celebrity. I'm the same people. They knew, I went to school with these people. They know, my friends know me. It's just now like, oh, like it's like a...
But you've been back often.
Yeah, I go back often. But that's the difference. Point,
I haven't been back in years.
They did tell you you're a little different.
Yeah, of course they. I'm completely different. That's why I said I'm almost like a stranger, because now like the way I think is not the same anymore than when I was back then, and it's not gonna be anymore. You know, I like the way I think now. You know, we don't think the same. And most of my friends also that live in a diaspora in other countries, and we come back, it changes. Your thought process changes now. You know.
Well, my family's from Trinidad, so when I go back and visit my family in Trinidad, they look at me as a Yankee boy, you feel me? Like, some of my friends call me, like, white man. They're like, yo, white man, what's he seen? You know? So, like, that's that distinction right there alone tells you that, like, all right, but, you know, like, they know you're a foreigner. It's not like, yeah, your parents are Trinidadian, but you know you come from a foreign place. You're not really into the culture of where we from, you know? So yeah. Even though that, like, you might feel that, like, yeah, I would say I'm a Trinidadian, I'm Ghanaian, I'm Senegalese, I'm Malian, to them it's like, you a Yankee boy, you know? So
all right, so we know they spend a lot of time idolizing as well, but when we look at it, because we speak about people in America, we speak about hustling and having to work really hard for our dollar and grinding, and yeah, it's not as easy as people may think it is. But do we also know as well, sorry, just to say, like, government plays a huge role in the structure of your country, plays a huge role in access to opportunity and success and doing good and all these different things, living a good life. But part of it also is on the person. It's on the individual to sit back and put everything they have into the world and the life that they're living to make the most out of it, and whatever opportunity they do have to create more opportunities for the future. Kind of like with when we talk about a couple episodes back, I think it was Tamba, and just your great-grandfather? Grandfather?
Yeah.
Okay. So great or grand?
Great.
Okay, so great-grandfather. Specifically, his opportunity wasn't, it wasn't this big pool of opportunity. It was what he had, and he didn't focus on, like, all right, I'm going to, like, do, like, you know, he didn't focus on all the outside stuff. It wasn't what's cool, what's to idolize. It's, no, how can I get to what I need to get to within the confines of what I have? So do we feel like people in Africa just spend too much time idolizing us? And if they focus more on themselves, I guess it may be a hot take. I'm not saying that I think it's true. But if they focus more on themselves, would that opportunity be right there? Or is it, we can get into the big thing, is it on us to give them that?
I don't know. I feel like it's nuanced in many different ways, you know. In one way, and again, I felt part into it, where when I was in Ghana, you do want to be that American because it's cool to be one. I'm so serious, especially if...
It's cool to be African today now.
Yeah, oh, of course, definitely. But, then again, I was a child, but just the allure, that's what I'm saying. Just the allure of it, where were you that kid in school with your parents in the States, and you get them Jordan kicks, and you wear them in school in Ghana? I'm telling you.
But my whole thing is,
the way you get looked at is okay. Different.
Yeah, all right.
The way you get treated is different. Right. That's just the low part of it. Also, too, in terms of focusing on them on themselves and trying to make the opportunities for themselves, most of them also are working very, very hard to make the opportunity for themselves, especially to come to the States or to go abroad. But the thing is that going abroad is very, very expensive. And the process to go abroad, I've been through that whole process.
It takes the village.
Not even with the village, adding that upon it, just going to the embassy, making sure that you present yourself, the shots that you have to take, the money that is involved to print passport pictures, to pay for the passport book, to get the American visa, mm-hmm. to go for your American interview visa. To wait in that long line, it's a lot. So that's the aspect I'm talking about in terms of like them focusing on themselves. But again, it's nuanced in various ways, in my opinion.
Yeah, not only that too, but the fact that say I can speak for my mom's, when she came up here, she came up here by herself. So it was like sometimes some family members or some people that come from abroad from a country from like. Abroad, and they come up here. Sometimes they're doing everything by themselves, like literally in a foreign country by themselves with no family members, nobody to help them. Everything they get is for them by themselves. That's the reason why a lot of like different cultures can relate to parts of our experience. You know, that's the reason why like I could say for like Mexicans when they come here is like a lot of them come by themselves. You know, and like they work hard, they try to provide for them families back home mm-hmm. to bring everybody up.
And to Amiri's point. And the question that Damo is really trying to get at is it our job to give back? And to cut and dry? I think so. And I'm going to tell you where my position is. And I'm sure a lot of Africans living in a diaspora could relate with me because it's two sides to the coin. So I'm going to say my side and you guys can say the other side of the coin. I was raised in Mali. This sense of like patriotism is in me. You know, everything I have is because of Mali, you know, everything I have, you know, everything I have is my, this is my identity. That's why every time we talk about stuff, I always want to go back. That's my mindset. There's not even two ways of thinking about it. That's my mindset. I have to go back and I have to help the continent. You know, like Adamo was saying, when my grandfather went to school and he excelled in school, it wasn't for me to come to the States and stay here forever. You know, to him, he always told us, come back to your country and come help your country. There's too many people that are living in not so fortunate spots that we can do something with the experience we learned in America and taking it back there. The intellect that we have and taking it back there. Now, as far as them accepting us and being ready for us to go back, that's a different conversation. But I think no matter what, we should try our hardest to go back. I'm gonna let you guys say the other side.
But I want to ask you a question pertaining to that, TK. But what are you specifically giving back? What are you specifically giving back to back home? Like, are you giving back people's desires or are you giving back opportunities?
It's opportunities. Whether it's to go back, create a firm to employ people. You know, whether it's to go back and invest in anything back there. Whether it's schools. Whether it's to sponsor somebody, you know, pay for their studies back home, like anything to give back. There's numerous ways to give back. You know, start an agricultural project to increase the food production there. Any little thing. Now, that's easier said than done. And obviously, we're all going to be working towards that, I think, today. But, Lord, I'm looking forward to you bringing the other perspective.
Okay. I'm chopping right here for Lord, just to give you some more of my, I guess, an American perspective of it. Because it took me a while to really get in tune with my culture and really get in tune with where I come from and all these different things. So the African diaspora wasn't something that was shown to me that was like I didn't know I had to give back. I didn't feel like I had to give anything to anybody. I was here. I was African and I love my culture and I love the traditions that we have and all different things. But there was nothing that said I had a responsibility to grow back Senegal specifically, more so my family, you know, generational wealth and that type of growth. And that, I guess, in a sense, was looked at as helping my country. But through experiences, through different levels of education, all these different things, you learn about the diaspora.
which I guess prior to us starting the episode, I kind of asked you guys a little bit because I felt like for me, it was something that I was told I should do. It wasn't necessarily like TK feels like he owes Molly, you know, like he would have felt that even without knowing the definition of what a diaspora was, he'd feel it because he feels like he's just indebted. And to me, I had to learn what that was and understand that I have to do that. But it also feels like I have to. And I'm not big on halves, but it feels like I have to. And through time, I've felt like I definitely do owe. I owe people in general. And I see that it isn't enough a little bit to be vague about it, I guess. To be like, oh, yeah, you want to help the world. You know, you want to help people and blah, blah, blah. To help people, you do kind of have to help smaller groups at a time. It's a grassroots thing. It's a small service thing. So I'm going to say it is not our job, but I do feel like there should be a strong inclination for people who understand their roots to want to go back and help people. And it starts by helping people from where you come from. I just feel like not everybody who comes from that place or who was in a different position that's African living in a foreign place or whatever it is, they might not necessarily be in a position where they have to necessarily give back at all. Like, because we don't know what their lives are. We talk about the struggles that people are living. You may just not even have the opportunity to do it. And that doesn't mean that you don't deserve to be part of the diaspora or you don't deserve to, you know, be a part of where you came from. So I don't know if it's a job. I think it's something that people should be inclined to do once they're put in a position to do so.
Like my grandmother used to say, it's nothing to give. However, for the people that are receiving, understand the capacity and appreciation of how I'm giving it and what I'm giving. Because there is a backstory to what I'm giving you. You understand? So it's like, whether it's like your personal desires in terms of like materialistic stuff that you want, and or whether it's like opportunity-wise, understand that people abroad, that's living abroad, have to put in some type of work or have some type of sacrifice in order to give you that type of opportunity back home. However, so when you receive that item or that gift or that whatever is being given to you, take it with appreciation.
Yeah, definitely. And to Adamo's point, whether it's our job or not, or we owe it, I think you summed it up really well. If you can, you definitely should. Okay? Because even to this day, when I see my parents going back and make all the sacrifices, you know, they made for me to make it, you know, and they still go back, something rubs me the wrong way if I don't go back and kind of continue their legacy type of thing. So that's where I was coming from. You know I sounded very patriotic and stuff like that, but I will try, you know, to make it to the point where I can provide for my family first, and then if I can, everybody, you know. The one is, it's a little out of time, you know.
Yeah, I mean, everything that you all said is commendable, especially in terms of giving back and going back to Africa, or in my case to Ghana, because right now, Africa is experiencing the negative effect of a massive brain drain, where our best and our brightest are not in our continent. They are thriving and making, you know, headway in other countries. To go into TK's point, you said what you just said is because you lived in Mali. You've experienced the people. You know the culture. You are the culture of Mali. Right.
Well, now I'm a foreigner, but go ahead.
but what if it's a first generation African, you know, from the African diaspora, who is not so much in touch or do not know so much about the African diaspora in terms of not knowing where to give or how to give? You know, I'm not saying that they shouldn't give at all. Of course, as you said, if you can, do it. But now the question is, and something that we could talk about later is, what if you're first generation and you don't know how to do so? Because again, if you've never been back and all your life has been in the States, what motivates you to go back and pay it forward?
That's definitely a question that we'll answer in another episode. But people today, definitely, if you are in the African diaspora and if you can help, find any way to do it. It's going to help in the long run. It's definitely going to help in the long run. And it's a good deed as well. So if you can, definitely help. But Lord, we'll get to that in another conversation.
But yeah, just to piggyback that to wrap us up. We know the opportunity disparity is real. We understand that the how people view us back home and what we live here, it's not rooted in falsehood. Like there are things to the myths. But I guess it is, again, there's a lot of weight on our shoulders, like Atlas, I guess, but it is up to us and I guess people at home to have an open ear, but it is up to us as well to obviously work on awareness, communication, all those different things to bridge that gap and help in that opportunity disparity as much as possible. But yeah, so we've debunked some beautiful myths. We've I guess argued over a little bit of them, but this is definitely a good one, guys.
What's our social media again? Because I ain't gonna post something.
following that, definitely follow us at Instagram, guys, at t.i.a_pod. Twitter at tia_pod. Facebook, you can find us. This is Africa.
Pick them one by one. Make me bust my gun. Poison us like a long python. Gunfire in 911 dying. We never like the sound of them siren.